Bill Walensky is a graduate electronic engineer from Bucknell University. He spent the major portion of his career in the design and development of digital data processing systems. He's the founder and director of the Mind and Body Institute in Poughkeepsie, New York, where the emphasis is on bringing to the community those subject areas normally ignored or denied through conventional channels. Bill?
There was some question as to how appropriate a subject like biotypes would be at a psychotronics conference. That question has all disappeared this morning when Orion and Joyce made their presentations, particularly Joyce, when she said that psychotronically we should be able to measure those energies that are negative, the energies of bad emotions that will eventually be the bad seeds of disease. This particular presentation is composed of many thousands of studies of individual cases. It was compiled, my primary reference here is the book, Biotypes, by Joan Earhart Trichel. However, there are other books that you can use to supplement, A-type Behavior in Your Heart, Psychotypes, the books by, Ken Pelletier, Mind is Healer, Mind is Slayer, this new one, Body Mind by Ken Dickwald. All are very good references. All right. What has been shown on the screen right now is roughly what we're going to go through quickly. The premise that there are biotypes. Personalities can cause or help cause a disease to manifest within themselves, within the individuals, via thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. Early life experiences can have lasting physiological imprints that could make a person more open to disease. Now, you have to keep in mind that all of this work has been done primarily through questionnaires, a lot of them before the fact. In fact, I think in 80 we start to get the results of a 20-year Canadian study where they have taken data on feelings, lifestyles of people and have been watching them for 20 years, going to culminate, I think, at the end of this year. A lot of them have been done in retrospect, afterwards. They've determined where we have so many cancer patients, what was their lifestyle, what preceded the event of the degrees. That one is tough because lots of times they have to make a distinction. Did this cause that or did that cause this when two or more things appear concurrently? However, enough work has been done so that distinct patterns are starting to emerge. What it turns out is that negative emotions often seem to prepare people for disease. A feeling of helplessness, hopelessness, depression, and grief are great predisposers to disease. They seem to work by impairing the body's own immunological functions. Repressed emotions, primarily negative ones, appear to prepare people for disease. These things that you will see are all predisposers. They do not say that if you have them, you will get a disease. But the odds start creeping up the more of these things you see in yourself, particularly the negative ones. A possible mechanism for tracking this phenomenon, we refer primarily to what is sometimes called the reptilian portion of the brains where the emotions seem to have their seat. It's the limbic lobe where the emotions are manufactured. I think you can all see that pretty much on the chart, that the hypothalamus is intimately involved, having a direct effect on the sympathetic nervous system and on the pituitary or the master gland. And these have their chain reactions. Now, if you look down at the bottom, you see psychological stress. It shrinks the thymus and the lymphatic tissues, and therefore has a direct effect on the immune system of the individual's body. Our menu type today, you can see in the classics. Interestingly enough, too, that they're building up enough data on many of additional diseases, discomforts of people, that not quite solid yet, but we will hear about them, I'm sure, within the next 5 years. That's the bottom group. So you can see that there are classifications and studies going on, and many studies. There's no one place you can go. Whoever picks out a study or gets a grant does a certain aspect of a certain thing. And then you have to pull these all together to make the pictures you're going to see. This is how the data is structured and what it means. I primarily will not say anything about the disease. If you're interested, you can look it up. You probably know what most of them are anyway. Heredity, I think you know. Sex, I think you know. There are some diseases that seem to home in on females or males, and some that are indiscriminate. Birth order. Typically, there are three kinds of birth order. There's a firstborn, a not firstborn. What's the third one? The last born, right. Overindulgences. And you can see in your mind's eye some of the character, oh, only child. You can see in your mind's eye how parents would treat children in their early years differently because of their status. When you have a young child and the second one comes along, the new baby demands more attention, and therefore there is a critical time period where the first child feels abandoned or left out because of the demands of the second child. After a certain age, that no longer is as significant. The behavior of the parents on young children, very significant. The childhood, very key here in the childhood aspects, is not what actually happens. Very often, what is very significant is how it's perceived by the child. I mean, denying an ice cream cone is just denying an ice cream cone. But if the child perceives the denial of that ice cream cone as being an act of unlove, maybe the way it was denied, that is what is significant, the perception of the event. What we will concentrate on or direct our attention to today is the personality and behavior, primarily of the adult, that reveals some of the characteristics. Now, there are positive ones, but we are concentrating today on the negative aspects. Those symptoms that we can see in the behavior and thought processes that I hope Joyce will carry on and promote, that maybe psychotronically we can detect. Because sometimes we have these and are not aware of them. So the first step would be awareness. And then, of course, compromising it, so that it does not have the negative effects on us that it possibly could have. The conditioners, things that go along with them, often present. We're not sure what role they play, but they're significant because they appear statistically more often than we think they should. The socioeconomic levels, this appears as a factor in some. So does religion and nationality, strangely enough. In fact, I think you all know about some of these. You've heard of the sickle cell anemia problem characteristic. I was talking to a woman not too long ago. She had this problem with her fingers. And she's been all around to doctors and can't figure out what it is. And it's important to her because she's in secretarial work. Finally, she found a doctor in New York City. She went in there. He went through all his classical stuff. He came back and he says, "Are you Jewish?" She said, "Yep." He says, "Are you Ashkenazi?" She said, "Yep." He says, "Clear, you've got so-and-so." By knowing that she was Jewish and derived from the Ashkenazi, he says, that's a characteristic of that particular sect. He says, and it's genetically transferred. She didn't know what it was, neither did anybody else, but this guy did. Ink blots. That's the classic Rorschach. You will see a lot of empty places in the data, and that is because not everything has been done for everybody. But where it has been done and proven to be of some significance in the interpretation, I will have an entry. The last one is the figure line drawings. That is a test devised by Dr. Carolyn Thomas, primarily for use in protractive testing. It was first used, I think, at Columbia Medical School, where they took all the medical students and asked them to make line drawings, you know, sticks. Then she used them and analyzed them and found that there was something like between 75 and 85% correlation after the fact of people who had drawn things in a certain way ended up with ulcers, ended up with heart attacks, ended up with cancer. So there is something within the person working that is revealed by the types of drawings they make. Unfortunately, it was a small sample. It was only medical students, only at Columbia, and took 20 years to verify. Common to all of the areas that we're going to talk about today are these elements. That there was some psychological trauma perceived, very often real, but mainly it was perceived by the individual in childhood, or there was a parental attitude of suffocating, overprotection, or neglect. Not true in all cases, but in a great many of them, related to the particular areas we're going to identify today. And in the personality and behavior, you will find a very common thread that the person, at least during the incubation of the disease, had strong feelings of helplessness and hopelessness. There was a strong erosion of their self-image. They suppressed negative thoughts and emotions, and very often adopted a Pollyanna outlook. Now, the problem doesn't really exist. If I don't pay any attention to it, it'll go away because it isn't really there. And then very often you will find that there is a compensatory adaptation. They compensate for their insecurities or unhappiness with self-sacrificing work, obsessive or compulsive behaviors. Now, sometimes you can see this in other people that you associate with closely. You virtually never see it in yourself. That's the help of a good friend or a good therapist. If they can identify these and lead you away from some of them, it's like a bad seed. If you create the right environment, you'll get the weeds or the poison ivy. Well, if you can provide the right environment for good plant growth and not disease, then your chances are much better. All right, triggers. In almost 100% of the cases, there has been some trigger, and usually this trigger always is identifiable either as a single stressful event or as an accumulation of several minor stressful events. There hasn't been a case that I know of that has not been preceded by a stressful event. I am not going to go in detail over all of the entries. You will get a feel and let your eyes wander down the page so that you can pick out those things that may be of interest and significance to yourself. There seems to be some hereditary factor involved with migraine. Hasn't been isolated, not proven, but they think it's there. There's a sex discrimination one. Migraine is much more common amongst women. The implication here is maybe it's a hormonal thing, don't know. The background, usually a migraine person has had a dominating parent image. Could have been a mother, father, more likely, you know, some dominant, could have been a grandparent. Very characteristic, they repress negative emotions. There's an extreme strong conscience relative to themselves, a compulsion to do what is right, extra neat. It's my duty in this type of person. Very often you'll find violent, immature emotions showing up within the person. And go down and look at the triggers. There's been a stressful event. Now here, a stressful event could be a planned trip to visit the mother-in-law on Sunday, or a final exam coming up. It's how they perceive the event that creates the stress. By the way, number one, stress itself is necessary for life. You cannot live without it. Too much stress, or the inability to handle the stress, is what's bad. And how you perceive the stress makes the situation either a small stress inducer or a large one. Stress also comes from good things. You have heard such things as a person winning a lottery and getting $1 million and dying. Right, that good luck or that good fortune is also a stress inducer, as well as the death, sudden death of a close person to you. So stress is all around us. We cannot avoid it. We can minimize it or we can learn to cope with it. But you will find that there are stressful events in all of these things related to the diseases. Tension headaches are the most common ones. And very often with tension headaches, you'll find a history of a dominating parent. Not as much dominating as the migraine, but still a very strong dominating parent. Tension headache people, as you find, are going to be chronically angry and despondent. That's very common. They also repress hostility, or, as I have here, become bitchy periodically. It seems to be one of the characteristics. And they have a history of a long-standing anger or unhappiness. Sometimes not clear why, but they have a history. There are other conditioners. If you look down in the conditioners box, it could be defective vision, sometimes poor neck posture, things like this. That's a case where we're not sure, or I talk like I did the work. I didn't. I'm just reporting on other people's work. Of will you get the poor neck posture and the neck pain because the headache's coming on, or do you get the headache because of the other things that cause you to have put your neck at that time in an unusual and uncomfortable position? It's a kind of a chicken-egg loop. And sometimes you can make your own judgment, sometimes you cannot. Okay, let's move on. All right, here's a sex one, cluster headaches. It's a form of the migraine category. Almost exclusively hits males. Why? I don't know. There seems to be some genetic predisposition to the cluster type of headache. Interestingly enough, it's almost always precipitated by alcohol consumption. You sort of get yourself ready. If you're not ready for it, the alcohol won't do a thing. But if you are in that, built up to that condition, the alcohol will trigger it. Very closely related. And also, you find that the physical appearance, this is an interesting one, I forgot the number, but the height of the person, male, usually seems to be a factor. And hazel eyes was very, very common. Tie those together, I don't know how. But when you start collecting the data, and all of a sudden you find great groups of it, lumping around a physical height and hazel-colored eyes, well, that ties you back maybe to the genetic predisposition. And if you don't have these things, you're less likely to be a victim of cluster headaches. The psychogenic headache, of course, is exclusively psychological. Very often the trigger there is overwork and overexhaustion readies you for some stressful event, depressing emotions, distressing emotions, or excessive stress, or anticipation will do it. I think these categories are more in the news today. Cancer is not our number one killer. Heart disease is. These are very much in the news of late. And I'll just let you run your eyes down and see some of the things that maybe you didn't know. That in the birth order bit, being an only child is almost a guarantee of immunity to cancer. There are so few cases of only childs coming down with cancer. How you relate this and interpret, I don't know. But that is, you know, is what the data shows. All the cancer victims, or a great percentage of them, have had traumatic childhood. They have had a profound sense of loneliness and desertion, including from animals, loss of a pet. Doesn't have to be of the family. Animals can desert people too. In their personality, they are lacking in their interpretation of belief, the perception of their self-worth. They believe they don't deserve love. Not all the time. But at a certain period in time, they have this belief that they're no longer worthy. And this seems to open the door to incubation. The profound helplessness and hopelessness about the meaning or validity of their lives does not have to be a lifelong characteristic. It could be induced by the loss of a mate. And then they say, you know, I was living for that person, and now that person is there. What do I have in life? Now, it could be that kind of a complex interreaction. However, the feeling does occur very often in the candidates for cancer. I almost don't have to say anything about the heart attack. I think you're all familiar with the A-type personality. There's a book uniquely written about the heart attack type of person. As a child, they had excessive closeness to their parents. They were never detached from their mother or hurt by their father. A great big percentage were fed as children on achievement stories. Interesting study there. They took children's stories from, I think, something 17 nations, 17 foreign languages, had them all translated and coded, and gave them to different people to read. And the different people read these stories and classified them as to achievement-oriented, thrilling, blah, blah, you know. And it turned out that there was an exact correlation that the countries that fed their children the highest rate of achievement stories had the highest rate of heart attack victims. One for one, in every country, in every story. And this is going back, you know, to 30 years ago when they fed the children the achievement stories in the home and in the school. These were the popular ones. So there's a drive motivation there that has been instilled as a child. That drive has carried it forward into adulthood. And it's kind of, you know, the heart attack type of person is always striving, and no matter what they achieve, next time they got to do it better. And there doesn't seem to be any reason except that last time I did this, so this time it's got to be more. because cancer and heart attack or heart disease victims are so much in the news, there's much more data available about them. If you look in the heart attack column, you'll see the number one religious denominations for heart attacks are Protestants and Jews, about equal. The second most prevalent are Catholics. From three on down, it's everybody else. So there are some religious, it could be a religious training, it could be the home training with the religious bent. Some of these things are not fully interpretable. They're just data that is collected. So you become a Mohammedan, maybe your chances of a heart attack are a lot less. Primarily from the book named Biotypes, but there are inputs from other sources. In fact, just the other day I ran across one, and I went to put it in my notes for today's presentation, and I realized they didn't have it in the presentation at all, the one on alcoholism. At the University of Iowa, they just have identified a hereditary factor in the bloodstream of alcoholics, which they guessed might be there. And this is the first time. Now it needs verification, but they have identified a unique substance in the bloodstream of alcoholics. So each day we'll add a little more information. Sometimes it's adding to it. Sometimes it's correcting some misconceptions. You have to keep alert. Well, if you look at the drawings, for example, the cancer patients, a very high propensity for drawing the stick figures with one arm out and one arm towards the body. Doesn't seem to matter which one. So that one arm is going away from the body and one arm toward the body. Sometimes it's the leg positions, sometimes it's the direction of the arms that makes the difference. And this is years after the fact. They go and see who had the cancer, who had the heart attack, and what did they draw 20 years ago. Interesting. Okay, more on the heart disease, the angina. The personality, dependency needs that are covered by aggressive bravado. In other words, they mask it. They develop a behavior pattern to mask their dependency needs. They suppress negative emotions. They're very prone to anxiety. What produces anxiety? That's a rather personal thing, although there are some things that will induce anxiety into everyone. However, there are personal things too. And the high blood pressure, interesting here is that as a childhood, they were never driven. It was inferred that they achieve. It's good to compete, but never driven. It's different than the heart attack victim, where they had a background of achieving. Here it was less, more subtle. It was inferred. They too, very tense and anxious and very insecure about life. They engage very often in deferential and self-effacing actions. They accept blame and very often feel the need for punishment for not being something that they think they should be. They repress negative emotions. You'll see that very common. The helplessness, the hopelessness, repressing negative emotions. I think what we're happening is I'm shoveling too much statistical dry data at you. I don't think that's important. I think it's important that you know that this kind of data exists. I think it's important that you're able to identify some of the elements that appear very frequently, because before you can start any action, you must be aware. Once you have the awareness, then you can consider approaches and alternatives. All right, my purpose here is to bring some of this awareness to you, not to stuff you full of data and statistics. with this awareness, maybe you can use some psychotronic techniques, both on the original end of determining their existence, or on the helpful end of either purging them from you or redirecting them so they become beneficial, something like the work that Orion does. I will flip through the remaining few charts just so you get an idea of the categories. I'll leave them there momentarily, so if there is anything in there that strikes home and you want to look at, you'll have a little bit of a chance. Interestingly enough, becoming more and more prevalent in our society is the anorexia nervosa. I never heard of it, I think, 18 months ago. But then when I heard about it and I started and I kept my ears open, I keep hearing more and more and more. Well, it's not my field. I guess I shouldn't know about it. But if you look around your friends and neighborhoods and travel, your ears perk up as soon as you're familiar with something. Starving yourself to death happens primarily to girls, but boys, and very typically in the teenage group. And sometimes they force themselves. They will eat and then throw up, regurgitate it all. They have a distorted image of their body. Right now, I think it's becoming a specialized field, just the study and the approaches to helping these people. And after I got into this, I have a friend at work whose son died this way just 12 months ago. 14-year-old kid. In the hospital and everything. Starved to death. No reason. Obviously, there was a reason, but there's no way they could help him. Obesity and well, apparently bad breath, bruxism, trench mouth, constipation are not strong enough to, or it's either too prevalent, so the data that they come up with is all over the place. They get too much. The only thing that they've been able to say uniquely, or a very high percentage about them, is that bad breath is a physical manifestation of depression. Bruxism is primarily the result of repressed anger. And if you can get people to not harbor that anger or not accumulate it, the bruxism will probably be controlled. Trench mouth, emotional stress, and constipation, result of depression or obsessive compulsive thoughts or behavior. I'm not going to just try to substantiate it. Characteristics travel through very common things like allergies. Right, this is very typically in an allergy, in all of allergies, there is a genetic predisposition. I don't think they've isolated, I don't think they know. But very common is where one member of the family has it, the offspring will continue it. Does not necessarily mean that it will, but that's more common. There's also an inference here that maybe the reaction is learned, but not completely true, because they can take children out of the home from the parents, you know, adopt them or foster home them, and those children will still have a predisposition to an allergy, which means that it's not the environment as much as the parental history. And it continues with the hay fevers and the perennial rhinitis. And another thing, too, I really had never heard of perennial rhinitis. And then when you become aware of what it is, then you start hearing more and more people that have it. Now, if I was a practicing physician, I would be aware of more of these types of things than I was before I got started into it. There's a couple more, eczema and hives. Interesting with the eczema. The parents apparently were very physical with the children. They stroked and patted the skin a lot, as perceived by the child. Maybe to the parents it wasn't a lot. There was an awful lot of parents sleeping with the child. Again, repressed negative emotions appears. Getting into the other, another category, the rheumatoid arthritis. Right. Very definitely, they have isolated a rheumatoid factor in the human blood. Now, this does not guarantee arthritis, but it does say that this person has a little more predisposition to lean that way when the other fertility conditions are right. There are three times more women are subject to rheumatoid arthritis than men. Father, mother, either one of them was arrogant or emotionally cold. The other parent was gentle and compliant, but ineffective or inconsistent. Very often, the parents were status incongruent. That means that they came from different socioeconomic levels, either the husband and wife, the parents, or these from their parents. You know, they might be moving up in the world. There was an incongruency in the status. Let's see. In the socioeconomic, often in the lower class backgrounds, with limited education, seems to be quite common with the rheumatoid arthritis. By mental disorders, there are cases for general mental disorders and suicides. Now, remember when the suicide, well, pardon me, when the only child was exempt from cancer? Here's a case in the criminal, in the mental disorders, where 39% of the victims are only children. So while being an only child may be an advantage in cancer, you lose out on the mental disorder end of it. No, the statistics are working that way, so take your choice. Sometimes be an only child and sometimes not, as long as it works for you. Included in the mental disorders is schizophrenia, criminal. And then I have three sections on depression and one on child abuse, which I will not, I'll just flash them up. Child abuse one seems to be one of those things that are perpetuated right down the line. Once it started, it keeps going because they repeat the patterns, I guess. All right. The conclusion of all of this is once you have the awareness that altering a psychological profile has abundant promise. You can change if you have these things and move the odds more to a favorable position. It won't guarantee anything, but it'll make you less susceptible. And in summary, I say, establish and maintain a positive outlook. Alter any obsessive or compulsive thoughts or behaviors. Learn to cope with stressful life events. Find a new lease on life, a new interest. Establish relationships, particularly a very good friend. Don't be particularly sensitive. What does she mean by that? Do I have bad breath? So what? Be a little more relaxed, a little less uptight and caring about some of those trivial things. You can conform intellectually and socially. Lots of times you become irritated, stressful, because you feel or think different than the particular strata of society you're associating with. Adopt an outlook that is gay, friendly, enthusiastic. Be optimistic about life, because what tomorrow will be, you are making it today. And you will make it tomorrow. If you want it to be good, make it good. Right. Know that you have control over your own health and your own life. And I have one last chart. I'm sure you've all seen it. And this is a listing, I forgot the reference, of the stressful events that are very, very common to people. And I want to reiterate that I believe there is great merit in the work that Charlie Whitehouse has done, and I hope will continue to do, Galen and others of you, not only in helping people once they become sick, once they become diseased, but in identifying beforehand the susceptibility and removing it, so that you don't have to do the second part, with the person having had to have lived through the trauma of the disease. All right, thank you very much.